Many organizations have buildings that don't fit their needs, creating inefficiency and limiting growth. Blue Line delivers innovative building solutions to give you room to grow and unleash the potential of your staff. Buildings designed by Blue Line improve the efficiency and well-being of the people that work, learn, live, and worship in them. As your organization or business grows, Blue Line makes sure your building can grow with you. Visit our website, blueline.team, today and sign up for a free 1-hour consultation. Let Blue Line show you the path to a building that will support your success for years to come. That website is blueline.team. Blue Line, delivering buildings of lasting value.
So welcome to the Pen and Shovel podcast, where we talk to people who have big ideas and find out what it took to make those ideas a reality. We ask them what worked, what didn't, and most importantly, what did they learn along the way?
I'm your host, Randy Seitz. And our guest today is Frank Spencer III, president of Aztec Contractors in El Paso, Texas. Frank is also chairman of Blue Line Holding Company, the sponsor of the podcast. And we'll talk more about Blue Line in a minute. But first, Frank, give us an overview of Aztec Contractors.
Yeah, no, thanks, Randy, for having me on, and looking forward to visiting with you today. So Aztec Contractors is a general contractor. We have been in business 16 years as of January. We are primarily a construction management company. We do not self-perform any of our work. We sub 100% of our work out right now. So we have a team of 23 individuals. Those range from your super foremen, superintendents, project engineers, project managers, director of operations into the office. We have our project coordinators. We have an office administrator, accounting clerk. But in total, it's 23 of us. And our primary book of business is both federal and large commercial. So our clients on the federal sector range from the Army, Navy, Air Force, Corps of Engineers, GSA, Department of Homeland Security, Department of Defense, Customs and Border Protection, GSA. And those types of projects are either ground up, large tenant improvement, and horizontal work. Over the last 5 years, we've gotten into the large commercial work, primarily K through 12. You know, we currently have a few large schools under our belt. We're working on one, or finishing up one now, and we just were awarded another contract as of today for another school on the east side of town. And our geographic region, with the federal government work, we have done work from Southern California down to South Texas. In our K through 12, we've been primarily here in El Paso. El Paso is kind of unique because we have access to New Mexico, which is a neighbor, and also Mexico. So we also do work in New Mexico, but those are primarily West Texas is our region.
So as a guy who studied English, and I have to admit, I didn't know that you studied English.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we could probably have a whole section of the podcast where we talk about a guy who wanted to study English, went to Texas A&M.
Yeah.
And not the other school.
Right.
In Texas. So how did you decide to buy and run a construction company?
So I think that, just to kind of segment into why English was that I have a uncle of ours, mine, that is a very prominent attorney in El Paso, and in the summers I used to work with him. So my idea was with the English major was I was going to go to law school. I was like 99% sure I was going to law school. And so in talking to him, he sort of advised me to go through the English route because of all the reading and writing that's involved. And so that's what I did. And, long story short, I applied to law school. I got accepted to one school. It was in Houston. 2 weeks prior to us being admitted or starting school, I got a call saying, hey, we over admitted and we're cutting you. So it was kind of like that. Oh, man, what am I going to do now? And so then I you know, quickly jumped into the finance realm. And, but again, that's a different story. And doing so, as I was working in the finance, I started to see a dip in the market. And so it was around the 2005 into 2006, where I just really started to see the writing on the wall. And I just, I guess there's a, in our family, that entrepreneurial spirit, it's in our DNA. My great-grandfather came from Lebanon at an early age. I think, I don't know if he was more than 12 years old, opened up a mercantile store in Mexico. And then my great-great-grandfather, John William Spencer, was one of the first notaries in Texas. He, you know, used to sell horses to the cavalry, opened up a business as well. So, you know, early on, I think we just have that entrepreneurial spirit. We have some attorneys, some doctors, we have engineers, in the family. So it's just one of those entrepreneurial spirit that I just wanted to be a part of a team. I still consider myself an athlete. I played competitive sports all my life. I got to represent the United States in Australia playing American football. And so I miss that team environment, that unit. And so that entrepreneurial spirit, wanting to belong to a team, I think was really what drove that decision. And my father owned Aztec Contractors, and the company had been dormant for over 10 years. So it was just kind of a natural step for me to say, hey, that's sitting on the shelf, not doing anything. Sell me the business and let me take a stab at it. It's really how it came to be. And so he sold me the business with zero capital. It was just registered in the state of Texas. And he said, there you go. Here's this piece of paper.
So, you know, knowing your story, it's a perfect segue to the next question. So as you sought to build and grow this company that you acquired, what were the obstacles you encountered?
So obviously, just like any small business, access to capital. That was the number one factor for me that's kind of said, what are you doing? It took me 6 years to get a local bank to bank me. I was fortunate that my hometown, which is a small community of 17,000 people, the local banker knows my family, knows me since I was a kid. He went out on a limb to help me out. So that's how we first got our first funding to get the company started. But yeah, access to capital was huge. Next, it was bonding. You know, in construction, you know, the main thing you got to have in order to be successful is bonding capacity. So it's chicken or the egg. We didn't have the capital, and there we didn't have the bonding. So it took literally another 6 years to also get a local surety company or bonding agent to bond us. I had to get outside of El Paso to find that help. And then the other thing that was a struggle was past performance. So in order to, you know, you need the funding, the access to capital, you need the bonding, you get those two, then you need to find a client, you need to find a job. And we weren't, it would took us a while to get a job because we didn't have past performance. So that was another struggle. And I think the biggest thing for me, not being an engineer, not being in the industry, you know, I grew up, my father's a civil engineer and a professional land surveyor. As a kid growing up, I would be in the field with his surveying crew. My dad early on, you know, did some construction work with Aztec. And so I remember as a kid growing up, I'd go to the job sites, but just never not having that exposure. I think the lack of knowledge that I didn't have was a huge struggle, on top of access to capital, bonding, past performance, the knowledge in the industry. And I think the last thing I would say is, and I struggle with it now, I think we all do, is hiring correctly, finding the right people. We went through several years where, you know, construction is kind of a cold natured business. You know, if you have a job, you got people working. When that job's done and you don't have another job, you can't keep them. And so, we went through a lot of change in personnel, and as the projects got a little more complicated, you know, finding the right team, the right people to manage these jobs was difficult. So those would be the top five challenges, I think, obstacles that I encountered.
So you've obviously chipped away at those over the years. As you've overcome those obstacles, how did the act of overcoming those obstacles change your perspective on the business? I mean, what were assumptions you had at the beginning that you either had to let go of, or that changed, or new perspectives you got from, you know, trying to get access to capital, trying to, you know, build up the experience that you needed for bonding, you know, hiring? Again, I think that maybe more than anything is a realm that'll change your perspective on how you're going about things.
Yeah.
So how did the act of achieving your goals kind of reshape the goals?
Yeah. So I think I was very, very methodical in year one when I acquired the business, of kind of really putting myself into the why. Why was I doing this business? What was my purpose? And so my goals, my vision that I had for the company was very fixed. I was very set on what I knew this was going to look like and feel like. So my goals never, I can't say they changed. You know, we might have changed courses, you know, with some of the things that we came against, you know, obstacles. But I think those obstacles served as a building block, especially for me not having any knowledge in the industry, as lessons learned. So that's what drove me. And then it went back to my why, my purpose. And that right there was, it allowed me to just make me even want it even more. It just seems like all these different things that happened, you know, I know you and I have talked about this in the past, but my very first job, you know, we had all of our general conditions covered. But the deal that the investors made was that we're not going to give the contractor his profit or their fee until we sell out the units. Well, it was a horrible time in the market. Well, guess what? We didn't see our fee. And so not having that, that was just right out of the gate. That was just a, you know, a pop in the mouth. And so I think that, you know, some of those things that we experienced in terms of that slow growth, or that, you know, hard lessons, made you appreciate certain things. And it also made you step back and analyze and embrace the process, if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. How do you define success? How do you evaluate where you're at, and are you going in the right direction?
So for me, for me, success is I find success when you're in a position to make a difference in the people that are part of your team, the community that you serve, the organizations that you decide to be a part of, and obviously the family, you know, the family first. I mean, what you're able to provide for your family. I think that for me is where I base my success on. And when you're in a position to make a difference, either by your involvement in an association, an organization, you know, I serve on several boards, your involvement with the community. I think that is, for me, what defines success. You have the ability to change lives, and we just happen to be in an industry that it's something tangible. For example, these schools that we're building, and this is our future generations. We're building a facility that is going to maybe house or be a part of the next president, in the years to come. And so, you know, that's kind of that feel good, service. You know, you can see it, you can touch it. The people Those are the impacts you make, you know, through everybody that's coming in and out of your door, the clients that we service, the subs that were part of our team, consultants that we're involved with. I think, you know, you kind of leave a little nugget with everybody that you come in contact with. And, you know, for me here with our Aztec team, it's not just about the work, it's about life. You know, if you can make that impact to make them a better father or a better mother, you know, spend more time doing the things they enjoy, there's no, you can't put a price on that.
Well, and that comes through loud and clear. I still remember the first time I went to your website, you know, over a year ago, and just that, you know, the consistent testimonials of staff to how Aztec is invested in them, you know. Yeah. And you and I have talked a lot about how so much of the design and construction industry is a zero-sum game. I mean, most people do business in a way that for them to succeed, somebody else has got to get the short straw. And I think that's where you and I, well, that's where I recognized, you know, kind of a kindred spirit, because I think there are so many opportunities, at least, you know, on the design side where I am, it's maybe a little easier, but to set things up so that it's win-win and, and, you know, maybe you take a little less in the short term so that somebody else succeeds in the short term. And it comes, you know, after, for me, after 18 years, it comes around again in a good way. So.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with that. And I mean, I think that that's where, again, if the time that I spent thinking about this business and the purpose, my why, you know, it's exactly to that point. Things will come around and you're not always going to be the one making the most money or being the most profitable. But it if you believe in what you're doing and you want to be a part of it, everything will fall in place eventually. And so, you know, that's the mentality. And I think that's, you know, that's why this industry and what I do is so special.
Yeah. And particularly the kind of, you know, most of what Aztec does is bid work. So that, that kind of relational distinction that Aztec has doesn't necessarily always show up on bid day. So that you're able, but so that the fact that you're able to maintain that culture, even as you succeed in winning these projects based on the numbers is a real, real testament to what you're building there at Aztec. So if you could go back and talk to yourself on the day you purchased Aztec, what would you tell yourself? What's something you wish you knew then that you know now?
You know, Randy, the world has changed so much. Our industry has changed so much. I don't know if there's anything that I would ask myself, and like knowing what I know now, because it's all changed. You know, we've had to evolve so much. I mean, COVID has just changed everything of how we do business. But if there was one thing that I could, that, you know, by what I know now, if I would have known it then, is how to work with the federal government system, knowing how to play in that system. Because I think that we would have had successes much earlier on in our, in my, you know, this tenure that, that we've been in. But I took the longer road. I took the one that was less paved. It was more, I didn't have a lot of the mentorship that like I now give. I'm constantly visiting with other business owners and subcontractors about how to do work with the federal government. I wish I had that. So, to answer your question, it would be that now what I know about how to do work with the federal government, I wish I would have known it 10 years ago, because I think we would have scaled a lot quicker.
Yeah. So as I alluded to earlier, Frank and I got to know each other about a year ago when Frank and a group of other investors purchased shares in Blue Line in 2021.
So Frank and I are business partners. And as some of you know, my day job is president of Blue Line. Blue Line is an architecture firm. We have offices in Harrisonburg, Virginia, in Houston, Texas. So Frank and I have known each other for, as I said, a little over a year. And I really appreciate, I think you hear it in my questions and my, I really appreciate Frank's approach, not to just construction, but to the integration of design, engineering, and contracting. The emphasis on, no matter what segment of that industry you're in, you're really only as strong as your people and your teams. And as we alluded to earlier, that if you have a long view, you can work towards mutually beneficial solutions. You don't have to climb over people on your way to success. So Frank, what made you want to become an owner of an architectural firm?
Well, I think it goes back to that first question about it's the entrepreneurial spirit, the challenges that come with that. I mean, I'm all about that. And so I think that there was a point in time about 2 or 3 years ago that I started to kind of feel again that need for something that we needed to diversify. We needed something else, it was more personal, really. Because I mean, Aztec is still growing. We've come a long ways, but we're not exactly where we need to be. So there's still much work to be done at Aztec. But for me personally, there was something else that I needed or I wanted to be a part of. And so, we talked to our partners, our other investors, and they've known me for a very long time. And I had that conversation with them. And so we started looking at opportunities to diversify and acquire another good small business. And so that's kind of where that stemmed from. And I think that because in our industry, it just made sense because, again, there's so much overlap between construction and design. I mean, you can't have one without the other and vice versa. And so to me, not being an engineer, not being an architect, I think that also helps because you look at things with a different perspective and there's no, I don't come with any egos. There's expectations, but at the end of the day, it's that service. It's that delivery to our clients that we believe in. And that's what we're about. And so when obviously we kind of went through the dating stages, when we had our discussions and that's really what I was looking for, the people. And so there was a lot of parallels in those conversations and discussions and it just felt right. Sometimes I tell people, I make decisions off of a gut feeling. You got to feel your way through some things. And so I just felt like it was a great opportunity. There's so many parallels and there's so many, because of the way that I am, my approach to doing things isn't that hard line. It's looking back and listening and then coming to together to make a decision. And I felt that synergy, that type of attitude and relationship where you can openly speak about reservations or things and not so much like it needs to be this way because I'm an architect or I'm building it, So I think that like now with this new generation, this new way of doing business, it's important. And I think that's what's going to breed success.
Yeah, you've made reference several times to how much the industry is changing and COVID accelerated a lot of those changes. And I think that, as we got to know each other, there's just not room for the people that feel like they have to impose their will on the entire process. I mean, we could sit here all day and tell stories. I mean, you could tell stories about architects who were jerks. Yeah. Yeah. I can tell stories about contractors who ruined my brilliant ideas, and stuff like that. And that's beside the point. The point is that building is complex. No matter how strong anybody's ego is, it takes a team. Yeah. So you might as well go into it with an attitude that we're all going to work together for our mutual client's success.
Right. And for me, it was also to improve. I mean, I saw it as an opportunity to really get inside the thought process of that side of the table. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's that, you know, we want to deliver as a contractor, you want to deliver the best product. I mean, what is the cliche? On time, on budget, and the quality is there. But there's more to that. I mean,
you only get two of those, right?
Right. Yeah. Right. So, but you know, and at the end of the day, it's always the contractor's fault. I mean, you know, it's just, that's kind of been the whole, like what I felt in my experience. You know, very few architects will step up and take the blame. And so I also felt like in order to really embrace this whole process, this, what we do, you know, what better than to get involved, you know, intimately with an architectural firm to hear that side of the story, to see the ways that we can improve as a contractor through their eyes, without, you know, singling it out in terms of, well, you know, I can't show preference to this contractor, because, you know, architects work with several contractors. They have their preferred, but you know, that's a valuable information. So I also looked at it as an opportunity to learn, to grow in what we do as contractors.
Yeah. And I really respect that. And I think that, you know, the fascinating kind of underlying model of getting something built is that there's so much money and risk involved in it. And that's only increasing year over year. Things got to get done faster. The way products are specified, the techniques in which they're employed is changing so rapidly now. So all of that translates into risk, big risk. And so the way the industry is involved is that risk is mitigated by kind of decentralization of tasks, design, engineering, construction. And unfortunately, all those kind of components, as we've said before, everybody's very protective of it, and it tends to create a culture in which people aren't willing to admit mistakes, aren't willing to, you know, keep the owner's interests ahead of any particular short-term interest. So, you know, right from the get, you know, so I think one, what you and our partners, Charlie and Frank, are trying to do in terms of, you know, how do we begin to create a suite of companies that are all in and of themselves self-sufficient,
right?
But are always looking for ways to get rid of redundancies, get rid of inefficiencies, and to approach projects and clients with kind of a kindred spirit. I mean, that was just really compelling and remains very compelling to me. Still feel very much like we're at the bottom of the mountain getting started going up it, but yeah.
No, exactly. And I think that's really a differentiating factor in what we have, that, I mean, you're almost, you want to just let it out there for the world to understand, but it's a process. You know, like you said, it just seems like we're still working towards that. But, you know, I think one of the questions, you know, you had mentioned to me earlier is that, you know, the vision for what we're trying to create is that type of environment, you know, where we have, you know, people coming together with an idea or a vision, and we can collaborate and make it a reality. Letting go of all those, you know, me, it's them, it's us. It's a collaborative effort with like-minded individuals that truly want to be or to do something great. And I think that heart behind this is what's really going to be that choo-choo train that can. That's going to be the driving force. At least it is for me, because that's that aha moment, because you're making a difference. You're changing people's lives.
That's great. Well, Frank, thank you so much. Our guest has been Frank Spencer, president of Aztec Construction and chairman of Blue Line Holdings, our Blue Line Holding Company. Frank, if people want to find out more about you and your ventures, where can they go to?
Yeah, so they can go to www.aztecontractors.com. We also have an Instagram and a Facebook account. I just do not know what the link is, unfortunately. But at our website, we have our link to our Facebook and our other social medias. And then I'm on LinkedIn as well. If you just search under Frank Spencer III, you'll find me. Happy to chat with anybody that would love to have a discussion of similar to the topics that we discussed. I truly love talking about this kind of stuff. That's what kind of drives me. But thank you for having me on, and look forward to talking to you again.
Yeah. Well, we'll be fun to do a follow-up and see where we are down the road from here. I want to thank Blue Line for sponsoring this podcast. Our executive producer and composer of our theme music is Tessa Benich. And you can find out more about this podcast at penandshovel.org. Pen and Shovel is all one word with no spaces. And you can also email us with comments and suggestions of people you'd like us to talk to. That email address is information@penandshovel.org. Thanks for listening.